Blog Talk Radio.
Of defining us, the requirement, not so much us, but the requirement of this perfect freedom of inclination. It requires a freedom of inclination. Now that's something where I am, we have difficulty talking about. But just to address it briefly here, the idea of perfection is such a curious kind of an aim. I never thought that it meant without any difficulty or challenge, but I thought that because I'm trying to be practical here, there's imbalance within that straight line. There are waves, and depending on how close you look at the line, that line might seem quite flat. It's like the perfection of what we see, our senses. I don't see the space between the molecules, but we know that there are certain laws present that help to explain what I see as solid surfaces and liquids and things and such. I think we apply that to ourselves just about every day. We have approximations, but we're learning more about this, the mechanics of our mind that helps to fill in the blank. It suggests to me that if we teach, if we absorb a noble ideas, and you make insert whatever you think that means, if we rest our thoughts on noble ideas, then that becomes the source of our understanding of ourselves in relation to the navigating this very, very interesting set of challenges, this almost endless challenges that exercise our minds. It's the benefit of something so creative. We always need to be, you and I know this, whether you're an old fellow sitting there simmering in distemper or not, we all know that the mind needs to be challenged or it falls into disrepair. It just turns to mush. It needs to be challenged. How do you challenge it? Well, I know, talking about somebody chasing you with a stick. I'm thinking more about something more vital. Although when you're being chased with a stick, it's certainly nothing more vital crosses your mind. I'm thinking more about the challenges. And all of a sudden, my goodness, isn't it apparent to us that it all makes sense if we're talking to mature minds, we're talking to adults. I don't think I've met anyone who has needed to have their childhood prolonged. I don't know that I've ever met anybody that's needed that, but I've met a lot of people that want to create the image that they're somehow, that they're timeless, that they're not aging. And in a sense, they become something that they're not. You know, I don't want to be 50 having the skin surface of a 25-year-old. That just creeps the hell out of me. That's wearing a mask. Certainly don't want to do that to delude myself looking in the mirror that, oh my goodness, I'm not facing my mortality. Really? No, you're just bloody, delusional. Much better, much better. It does echo the symptoms of what we consider beautiful and healthy. And it raises the questions about why we seem to be so, in some places, we seem to be so caught up in that sense of beauty. You and I understand that. That's why I think it's one of the reasons, not just the only reason, but it's one of the reasons why I believe that Masonry is really speaking to the more encouraging to a more contemplative state. You don't have to put your feet in concrete to do this. My goodness, no. No, it's that also, that the backstory, the one that you're building every morning when you wake up and you look at what you need to do and you measure how you're going to do it. To add yourself, to make that part of you so special that you are going to dedicate time and thoughts to the question of improving, being a better person, changing your values. My goodness, to suggest that being a better person is important. It's all about me, isn't it? Me and mine and get me and take me in and accumulation and all of that. We've been taught get by, and then you draw a line, and way over there in the distance is this little small, this tiny voice saying, "What's enough? What's enough, mate?" Well, yeah, I know. You know, you've heard those conversations by the authors about what enough is. Can a billionaire tell what enough is? Well, obviously, apparently, who's better off? Well, today we're being asked to take a look at that. And the question isn't going away. So we'll see all kinds of usual gymnastics, mental gymnastics to wash away our sins, so to speak. We are a species, and we live way over there and way over there, and we talk differently and we dress differently and have different cultures and different ways of thinking and different religions. But we also have, if we choose, the opportunity to celebrate and be amazed at our diversity. It's as if Darwin is showing us something that is completely evident, that we become, that nature, the world around us and inside us, is a determinant, is an influence. It's all about that influence. Maybe I like the fact that he was talking about the little birds on the islands and how some of them were the same species but developed different characteristics. I like that, of course. But to think that it applies to us, we haven't been around a million years that we know of, huh? And while we may be racing ahead thinking that apocalyptically that we're not really well suited for managing our sustaining our progress, we can make it. But yeah, I've reached that crossroad with you a long time ago. It's one thing to be successful at what you do, my goodness, but it's another thing to sustain it. Yeah. Can you do that? That's magical. I'm not decrying the value of that first brushstroke and the amazement of that first song, but to do it, that I think is an expression of the ability. It's just to have the talent, and then maybe you sit back at the first time, that one hit wonder, and say, "Oh my goodness, is that really me?" And we start to worry into our boots. Or somebody says, "Oh yeah, but I got a better idea. This next guy, I've got a better idea. You know, what if I did that? What if my composition went way over there?" And then once that happens, well, you know, then you're letting the genie out of the bottle, aren't you? Aren't you? So anyway, we give our promises and we expect them. And there's a lot of expectations. I guess, in a way, I'm talking here about who is responsible for putting the mirror up a year down the road and asking you to look into it and to answer. Talk to me about that perfect freedom of inclination in every candidate for its mysteries. Talk to me about that. What's it mean anymore? What's it mean? And talk to me about the oaths that you took, the obligations. We can go over them here. You know, it's a phrase here and a word there. So literalists will go off, but that's what they do, you know, it will go off. But for the rest, think about those obligations and the wording of it. And really, does it matter? Well, it does. It begins to. When we start to reassess Ah, that darn process, eh? That gets to, am I being too blatant here about the commentary today? The title of it is Gratitude. Masonry does that. It's an odd, quirky brotherhood. Man, it's amazing. It really takes the bite out of the religion and takes the teeth out of politics. It doesn't make them disappear. But it gives, in a sense, it gives us that ability to look at things objectively and not be swept up. And if you're challenging me and saying, well, Graham, that's certainly a rationalist's point of view. Yeah. Yeah. I mea culpa. It is. It's the authority is there, but is it relevant? I'll let you know. I'll let you know. Oh, that respect that you're trying to force? No, I don't have that. You can cause pain, but if you're thinking that you're going to earn or get respect, nah, doesn't happen. We lost that. That's been done too many times. It doesn't work anymore. You need something else just to earn it. Respect, of course, is the world knows, is earned. It's like trust. You should trust me because of this, because I'm wealthy, because I'm powerful, because you should fear me. Or as the philosopher would suggest, earn it. Demonstrate, earn it, and be willing in your own humility to demonstrate that capacity every moment of every day. Now, when somebody says that, it's not as a task. It's really echoing the methodology of Masonry. It's the way of thinking. It's the understanding when you're faced with these kinds of situations that you fall back on. Is it rationalization, ladies and gentlemen? Is it? Or what are the edges of that and the beginnings of understanding? I don't think that most of us walk around and it is where we are completely aware of anything. I think our brain is doing a lot for us to fill in the blank and to make life easier in a way, take our perception and make it fit more simply with the patterns of experience. So the sense of perfection, well, it's yeah, mock it if you're in that kind of frame of mind. I can't stop you from mocking science or math or anything. You're saying it's relative. Well, it's context, you know. How serious are you? Well, is that relative to, or are you always serious because you're angry? Well, angry people, if they can't control it, then they're experiencing some form of psychosis. But for most people, it's a temporary kind of a state of mind, is anger. It's a temporary emotion. It's why we don't use it to make decisions, because it's temporary. And when the anger dissipates, then you're left with this decision, this process, and it doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense. No. But we have simply that opportunity to put our lives and our thoughts in a different kind of a context. And it doesn't distort what goes on. Because we have this notion, this freedom of inclination, you're inclined to realize the seriousness of things happening around us. Yep. We understand that we make judgments every single day, and we need to be able to every single minute, and we need to, and it's healthy to understand and the basis for those judgments, you know, and because they'll tell us about the kind of person that we are. Yeah. So we celebrate here, as you've been. We're slipping into year 11. It was 10 years ago today. I keep saying 10 years, but it is truly 10 years ago that Masonic Effects began. Hey, why not? You know, what are you going to do? 10 years. That's a good bite, but let's see about the next 10 or the next 20 or whatever comes of it. The fact that to have found an audience, a program seems to have found the audience, doesn't. It's pleasant, but is it a surprise? I'm not sure I could say that. Because an appreciation of history and a hearing an opinion and listening to the music and poetry, well, that's not mine. that's not mine. You know, that's shared by a lot of people. It is. We're doing better than where a lot of people in the world are, especially these days. The change, well, it is coming. It always is. And the residue of that, will it be better? Well, when we get there, we'll reevaluate. And it depends. If you have a cynic doing the evaluation, if you have an optimist, you know, that's one thing. But we prevail. We make sense of it. And if you are inclined to think that degrading the human condition is a way to move us forward, and you simply declare in your thoughts that that is the reality, that's the perfect reality, then by all means. But I think you're living in the twilight zone. And I only say that, not to insult, but because there's evidence. Do that and listen to the director of your infant child. Or if you are more the misanthrope, then do that and feel the joy when your dog enthusiastically brings the stick back to you during your walk. Or you wake up and it's just after the rain and it just smells so sweet. Yeah. And then we'll talk. Then. It's a state of mind always. Interesting program today. Add controversial poetry. Why not? Why not? I started off simple enough with ease. You know, this late 16th century poet, Edward Dyer's work. And I thought, well, interesting poem and interesting kind of guy. And oh my goodness, it turns out that it leads you to controversy about who actually wrote Shakespeare's work. Did William actually exist? I love this. It's the conspiracy. It's a conspiracy. But I don't buy conspiracy. No, I'm not that clever to buy into conspiracies. I like the fact that there's controversy and that, you know, it sort of unravels the smugness, doesn't it? Anyway, here I couldn't think. I was thinking I could about music to start the show, and forgive me, I put in Beethoven, Ludwig van Beethoven's work, Ode to Joy. Why not? Sit back and enjoy. I hope you like the program today. Thank you.
Thank you.
So come back. We'll sit. We'll listen to the rest of the work. Beethoven, he deserves our attention, I think. Interesting work. Ah, a reminder today, the commentary is a reminder. And not to chide anybody, my goodness. I don't think people pay much attention to that. It's like, when it's like logic. When something is explained to us, we know it, but it's being reminded, putting ideas into a particular order. That's what's interesting. And those combinations, you can compare them, I guess, to notes on a chart. Some notes are, if I was to write a chart, it would be kind of bland, but you see the work of 8-year-old Mozart writing his first symphony when his dad was off being sick and not pestering him. Not a single correction in his notation. My goodness. 8 years old. Yeah. And it's worth compared to other of his writings, he was immature. Well, he was 8 years old. But it's exquisite. That often, over and over and over, we're reminded that benefit, the worth, the ability to show gratitude, just show gratitude for the little things. Oh, I'm not dismissing the people around that are so anxious they can't do that. No, that there are pathological levels of anxiety. People declaring just because they've let opinion rule their thinking that all things are as they say. Yeah. Gratitude and responsibility. No, this doesn't come from a side. It's not the teacher cracking us on the knuckles using, physical force. And that's unfortunately, that was the way I was taught through all my childhood. Pain, use pain, reinforce. That's the idea. Failure. This is from inside. This is really the essence of Masonry. All of this that we've spoken about today and over any time we talk, we're really weaving a path back to these ideas, these balanced ideas of responsibility for ourselves and for our sense of responsibility for others, and this notion of gratitude. Gratitude. It's an oddity, isn't it, to be grateful? And I'm not talking about the largesse of these oligarchs and people that can exploit the world for their own illiberal gains. I'm talking about appreciation of what is. Yeah. In ways we cannot begin to understand, Freemasonry has been channeling philosophy through a select membership to the world at large. The messages it brings is one of hope. The messages are those of hope and shared purpose. We know it began humbly, able to give men an opportunity to become or use literacy to advance their understanding. It was built long ago when there was no cogent, comprehensive, grounded account and gradually built definitions. It left us with follies, folding into fiction, producing so many silly theories and confusions rather than focus on outcomes. It focused on processes leading to outcomes. In our case, moral development for men capable of insight. It draws us like moths to light. It is the mathematics of life. Using it, we tease out the implications of our actions and thoughts. I use the term we under advisement. Membership is no guarantee of understanding. Men are, and often do, find awareness unsettling and desirous of stable familiarity. We like the safety of scaffolding that sorts out thinking for them. They do. That leaves a satisfying exploration of meaning and understanding to the poets and philosophers by drawing those traits out of the psyche. Experience teaches us it takes imagination to go deeper into purpose and existence without falling prey to confirmation bias. Yeah, we all have them. Believing what we want to believe instead of what logic and fact show us. If you teeter along this path with me, complaint becomes observation. Problems become symptoms. Determinism makes room for the fates. I had to inject that, wouldn't I? Making connections between arts and sciences is left to discovery. I would never claim physics should be removed from curricula because it is hard and every graduate does not find a job at the Hadron Collider or building space stations. Masonry takes us a step further, ready to tackle imperfection and reality, leaving you and me to pick the route and the company we take along. It's a beautiful thing, showing appreciation for what you have, needs driving wants, humble beginnings. Amaze, eh? Just amazing sometimes.
One misconception of meditation is that if you...
We don't need the misconception of meditation, do we? No, I don't think. Here, I'll put a little Chet Baker on Silent Night. Yeah, I think you'll like that a lot more. Well, I'm going to have to fire the techs that set up that music, won't I? As soon as I hire a tech, I'll fire him or her. little bit of heads up on this poetry. This is a fellow many of us may not have heard of, Edward Dyer. He was knighted, but interesting guy. He went from riches to rags. He was born in 1543, just to give you some context. I mean, 1607, he died in London. But he's described as a courtier and poet. Anyway, a lot of his work was published anonymously, so he didn't get credit. But there's a reason why it was published anonymously. Listen, Oxford-educated guy. So privilege, entitlement, all that went with that. And he went to court under the patronage of the Earl of Leicester, if that matters to you. And he was around notable people like Philip Sidney and the like. But he won favors when under Queen Elizabeth I. And he was sent on missions to the Netherlands and Denmark, and he was knighted in 1596 for his work. But the interesting part of that, you know, he was doing all right. You know, you can see him prancing around in his altogether, doing well and in his refined existence. But he was arrested in Prague in 1590. And he went there on a mission in search of the Philosopher's Stone. Yes, that very same Philosopher's Stone. The tincture, with the ability to transform base metals into gold or silver, to cure illness, prolong life, spiritual revitalization. Now, or if you're into a deeper dive into alchemy, it may have something also to do with the nature and expression of our personality. So he did not do well. So he fell out of favor. James I came in, and this guy was, you know, now he's arrested in Prague. You know, what the hell is this? He died in obscurity. Yep. So we have remnants of his work that we've collected. And this is one I consider perhaps his best known poem, My Mind to Me a Kingdom Is. I like how you kind of like it. It kind of flows. But then if you're starting to look at the poetry and a little bit of the context of it, you begin to note that there's a controversy. And it's in the poem itself. It's also allocated to a fellow named Edward de Vere, his 18th poem. And the question is this guy the real writer of the work that was credited to William? He takes teeth into that controversy without asking why in the hell would somebody do such beautiful work and present it as somebody else? Why? Because I can say it does, you know. He's admitting that this 19th century, they said Dyer was the acknowledged author. And this wasn't a question until, oh my goodness, there's a shock, the 20th century by Stephen W. May, who said, asked the question, did Dyer actually write it? Well, anything 20th century, we must be cleverer, you know. So you could get into, I'll let you do that research if you must, but it's like this. The Earl of Oxford's better known for being the subject of conspiracy theory, which sees him as the true author of Shakespeare's plays, and for an embarrassing incident involving a fart in the company of Elizabeth I. We will perhaps never know for sure which of two men wrote the poem, but we have the poem, which is the most important thing. Yeah. It's beautiful. It's magic. But share a little bit as an early Christian to everybody out there. Hey, it's my mind. To me, a kingdom is such presence, joy therein. I find that it excels all other bliss that earth affords or grows by kind. Though much I want that most would have, yet still my mind forbids to crave. No princely pomp, no wealthy store, no force to win the victory, no wily wit to salve the sword, no loving eye. To none of these I yield as thrall, for why my mind doth serve for all. I see how plenty surfeits oft, and hasty climbers soon do fall. I see that those which are aloft, mishap doth threaten most of all. They get with toil, they keep with fear, such cares my mind would never bear. Content I live, this is my stay. I seek no more than may suffice. I press to bear no haughty sway. Look, what I lack my mind supplies. Lo, thus I triumph like a king, content with that my mind doth bring, but some have too much, yet still crave. I little have and seek no more. They are but poor, though much they have, and I am rich with little store. They poor, I rich, they beg, I give. They lack, I leave. They pine, I live. I laugh not at another's loss. I grudge not at another's gain. No worldly waves my mind can toss. My state at one doth still remain. I fear no foe. I fond no friend. I loathe not life nor dread my end. Some wait their pleasure by their lust, their wisdom, their rage of will, their treasure in their only trust, a cloaked craft, their store of skill. But all the pleasure that I find is to maintain a quiet mind. My wealth is health and perfect ease, my conscience clear, my chief defense. I neither seek by bribes to please, nor by deceit to breed offense. Thus do I live, thus will I die. Would all did so as well as I. Kind of a generosity to it, wouldn't you say? Yeah.
Help and raise your hands to God.
Absolutely enchanting. Merry Christmas to me. I'm going to share a bit of history, just coincidental that it's happening and it coincides with our Christmas show this year. This is a history that's recounted about the process of change and impact of revolution over in the Netherlands, actually, after Masonry was formed and began the development of constitution and bureaucracy, and certainly given the history of the development of constitution, emerging work that was done in the Netherlands. And remember, at the time, this was a challenge for the authorities, because here a constitution made something for the very first, and think of it, for the very first time, this group would be declaring governance within itself, within its own structure. And wow, we all know better. It's the king or the queen that has that control. Upstarts. But nevertheless, things unfolded. And we're talking about the period of revolution in 1747. And that's obscure and it doesn't really mean a lot. But what is interesting about this period is what happened in we're talking about Nijmegen, this town or city there. But the messaging, and they were going after the clergy, were going after the reputation, destroying the reputation of these two brothers who were members of the craft. But it was picked up by the larger city. It's picked up in Amsterdam. Now, Amsterdam, during the revolution, the lodges had been closed by the authority. And so this is far more than just the reputation of the Merx brothers or of the fraternity. But it created this polemic, didn't it? Who the hell are these guys to ruin? We know what's going on, and they're ruining the reputation of these two brethren. And we've been through that in other chapters here, so we won't repeat that. Whether justly or unjustly, we're reminded Freemasonry in Amsterdam had been implicated in radical political agitation, if not revolutionary upheaval. You see, they want rid of it. Yeah. And in the confrontation of 1752, Amsterdam Freemasons were already politically suspect. Now, I think it would be wrong if we're speaking of them as if this whole idea was completely separate and apart. These ideas, this is an example of, this is a reference of something that was going on in Masonry throughout, and I dare say is still present. They were already politically suspect, and this will only deepen that concern. But to those suspicions were added new ones, points of contention that seemed to embrace most aspects of life. Now, I'm not talking about, the stuff that loose tongues in Masonic circles will giggle about. I'm not talking about that boyish tripe. We're talking about the serious underpinnings, people coming after this way of thinking. Freemasons had also to deal with the specific accusation of free thinking and heresy. Not necessarily because they were free thinkers, but because that charge seemed to be leveled against any foray into the civil and hence the secular that occurred outside the traditional local institutions of government. Scratch the surface and see what happens. Scratch the surface and see if this kind of thinking isn't still prevalent. People will want to stay safe. They will want to go along with those the established institutions of government, even Masons. A new manner of secular fraternizing, especially one that met in secret and that was organized around constitutional principles and egalitarian ideals, suggested an embrace of new values and beliefs, religious, political, and as well, as we will see, ethical. It's a polemic. Which side do we fall on? History gives us the reason, doesn't it? The reason to consider in real time that the import that attire, this comfort zone we giggle about, is actually quite true. How much is your ethical inclination worth to you? And how would you handle it? How would you handle it? And then, as we see, we can wonder how history will record our deeds. And what then? It's not to take us out of our celebration of the holiday. Of course not. But it's like, what would we? I think when we hear it like this, and it's nice and safe, there, we have thoughts that we would want to be bold and be firm. But would we be rash? Would we be intemperate with that? How would that be played out? Would we be obvious? Would we be provocative? Or would we be at the chessboard? Would we be thinking strategically? History will help us with, and we can imagine that it won't capture all these kind of nuanced issues, these nuanced approaches. So it gives us opportunity. I would like to think that we would have because of our background and our inclination, that we would have a little more sophisticated approach and response, maybe not so easily overwhelmed or controlled, but certainly to anticipate that the so-called threat, the manufacture of threat, is manipulation, isn't it? That leaves us to reconsider. And again, I know that's a rationalist point of view. Anyway, here, enjoy this. This is a cellist many of us will know since he was a little boy, Yo-Yo Ma. And he's sitting in with a well-known singer, Alison Krauss, and they're doing the Wexford Carol. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece.
God for us has done in sending him.
Thank you for your support. Thank you for your inclination over the years. It's a pleasure doing this program, knowing that we have listeners from around the world, our community, our brotherhood. And I'm grateful here that we're thinking of things and we're able to think of things with intellectual clarity, I'd say, you know, the freedom of inclination. We have the ideas and principles and ethics and values of Freemasonry, and we've in a large measure resolved that it is not gender-based at all. And we can still be very, very proud and secure. The aspect of the practice that I'm part of is a brotherhood. No apology for that. It is what it is, and it's wonderful. It is what you make of it. Masonry is a way of exalting the human spirit and the mind. And it's a pleasure to be associated with all of you. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. And I remember that it was you guys that helped me become a Mason. Anyway, I'll see you again next year. New Year's Eve. And anyway, we'll pick this up again and you can help me jump into the 11th year of Masonic Effects. And by the way, we should be having pictures back from the earliest points in time, in about a year, with the Webb telescope being launched. And interesting to see what was going on, the light that was coming back from the origins of the start of the universe. See ya. And Merry, Merry, Merry Christmas to you and yours.